You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Mama's Talkin' Loud. Jess and I love bringing these stories to you, amplifying the journey of the working artist mom, supporting the struggle, and striving to change the social safety net. But we need your help. If you haven't already, we would so appreciate if you would follow, rate, and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. This is the way we can continue to raise awareness and change the narrative. And if you want more insight into our world, please follow us on Instagram at Mamas Talkin' Loud, on Twitter at Mamas Talkin' Pod, and on our website, www.mamastalkinloud.com.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. I'm Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. Kicking off Pride Month, we have the Broadway Husbands, seen individually in many shows, including Wicked, Hello Dolly, and Billy Elliot.
Co-hosts of their own podcast on the Broadway Podcast Network, they teach, coach, and are here to share their ongoing five-year journey toward becoming fathers. Here's our conversation with Brett Shuford and Stephen Hanna. Welcome, friends.
Welcome.
Hi.
Stephen's putting his phone on Do Not Disturb.
Sorry.
There you go. Remembered. No, I fully, full disclosure, I just did the same thing, but thank you for that. Yeah. It's so good to see your faces.
I know.
Yeah, it's really good to see your faces too.
Y'all, I have to tell you, I've known them now. Well, Brett and I have known each other for 30 years, I think. Yeah, I know. Stephen's mouth is
on the floor. That's impossible, Jess, because you're 25.
Yeah, totally. Totally. We used to do theater together in Southeast Texas, and then my dad was his high school drama teacher for a year before we moved, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We carpooled a lot.
The Rushes have a huge impact on my life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a big time, yeah. And a lot of things were decided and came out literally in I talked about it on their podcast, but I was the first person that Brett came out to. Mm-hmm. Kara, I don't think you knew that.
I definitely did not know that.
Backstage, I think, at Brigadoon.
Yeah, backstage. And he had a crush on the quarterback in the high school. I mean, who was also in the drama department.
You also had a crush on the Tulsa and Gypsy.
Before I knew Jessica.
Oh, okay. That was before. I was like, wait. I've heard so many crushes.
We go,
which crush is which?
Sensible. But we go way back. And then Stephen and Brett, I've known them now together, you know, for a while. But you guys, so normally we start talking about, you know, having guests tell us about their children or their child. You guys are still on that journey. So will you tell us how you came? Tell us a little about y'all and who you are as a couple, you know, and then people can also tune into the Broadway Husbands podcast and find out more because they have their own. But will you give us a little backstory?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just a little bit. You know, I was a principal dancer with New York City Ballet when I met Brett. I'm Steven. And we met when I was first getting sober, which is another episode. And he is also sober. So that's kind of how we met. And there was a quick attraction. We like were instantly kind of into each other. And we were actually friends for a while. And then eventually we were out of some terrible relationships that we were in. And then it was like game on. And we've been together ever since. And that was in 2007. And since then, we've both been on Broadway in shows together at the same time.
We've never been in a show together.
Together.
Right.
But we both have worked on Broadway simultaneously.
So, and when we first started dating, I was in Billy Elliot and he was in Little Mermaid. So it was across the street from each other.
It was like the little gay dream come true.
Yeah. So we'd walk each other to work and then drop each other off. And then my show was much longer than his was. And I would come home expecting dinner and he wouldn't really have it ready.
Look at Oprah. I'd have to watch Oprah. That was my priority.
But we got married in 2011 and we just celebrated our 10-year wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah,
Jessica was there.
I was. That's crazy. That's crazy. It was beautiful. And I love y'all in your suits. I love whenever y'all share those pictures because they're so cute.
I remember when you went. It was during Jersey Boys, right?
It was. Long story short, I had to miss the actual ceremony because I had a callback for Evita and I was having issues. Like there was all this drama and I had my voice was it was a mess. But I did go to the reception.
Yeah.
And my husband was there because Eric videoed it and made your wedding video. Yeah. That was for the hot second he was doing that. So, but
yeah, he did. We watch it every year.
And it's like the best way to show people the day because it's like all the best moments in a music video.
But yeah, so that's our like.
Did I miss anything?
I mean,
is there something you need to add?
No, I think you did an excellent job, Stephen. That was so good. So, I mean, the parenting journey, I guess, do we want.
So let's get to that.
Talked about being dads. I mean, it was something we had talked about pretty early on in our relationship. Like, I remember vividly saying to Stephen, oh my God, raising a kid with you would be so much fun. We would have it would be such a cool adventure. But we were always kind of waiting for that right moment. Yeah. You know, and then people say, there is no right moment. It's like, yeah, for gay men, there is, because like we can't just get pregnant. You know, we have to figure that out. And
I think initially we had always thought, we were going to go the adoption route. That was kind of we just kind of had made that decision early on in conversations that we had with each other. We always thought we would adopt.
Yeah. And then at some point, well, Stephen likes to talk about this movie he saw that Molly Shannon was in. What was it called?
I don't know what it's called, but it's a very depressing movie. Molly Shannon, believe it or not, it's a very dramatic role
it's
for her.
It's a great movie. Film, but it's she's dying of cancer.
And she has a gay son who goes and basically is taking care of her before she dies. And there's this scene right before she dies. And she says, just promise me, when I'm gone, that you'll come back to visit your sisters. And he was like, well, yeah, of course I will. And she was like, because when you do, you'll always see me
in them.
And so I just like,
I'm crying.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, and that scene just like kind of got us. I mean, clearly. And then there was another conversation about, you know, I have a brother who, my oldest brother, which Jessica knows, has special needs. He's on the spectrum. He has something called Fragile X syndrome. And it's something that kind of genetically has been passed throughout my family. My cousin, her son has it. It's just like this, and it's passed through the female line of the genetic
carrier.
And I was just really nervous, like, well, if, you know, I just don't know. Like, I know what it was like having a brother with special needs growing up with that. And I know I wouldn't have the guts if we did adopt a child that had needs or had special needs or needed help. I wouldn't want to turn that kid away. There was just like all these things we started having those conversations about. How do we eliminate? I just don't know that I personally want to go through that experience of seeing my parents are still raising my brother. He's my oldest brother and he lives with them. It's just such a responsibility. And I was like, how do we eliminate the risk of going through that process again? And, you know, surrogacy is, it doesn't eliminate it, but how do we reduce it? And, surrogacy, you know, we can do genetic testing and we can look at the chromosomes and we can figure all those things out before we get pregnant. And I just felt like that was something for me I would like to do if we're going to be a parent. And I, you know, it sounds to me, I have a lot of guilt around it because I feel like it sounds like I'm not grateful for my brother or like that. And I am, I mean, he's such a gift to our family, but it's just seeing the stress and the pressure that my parents still have. I would like to sort of reduce that if we're going to move forward and be parents. And so we that was one of our discussions. And so ultimately we decided to do surrogacy.
Yeah. And so I think one of the biggest hurdles for us around just having a child in general is like putting up a lot of money up front. So, you know, we were trying to figure out if we could even do surrogacy. So we see this movie, we get really emotional. I think it was like, I want to say it was in the fall of 2017 when we saw it. And it was like a calling. Like, I remember like constantly waking up and being like, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. We got to make this happen. We got to do this. So, we started seeing how much it would cost and what it takes to actually do that.
And what they tell you is like flat out, everyone says, oh, it's going to cost you $100,000, you know, $100,000 to go through the surrogacy process, which sounds like, you know, up front, you're like, oh my God, how will I ever be able to afford that? But then we went through an organization called Men Having Babies, which is a great nonprofit that helps gay couples or even single gay men figure out their parenting journey. And I met this fertility doctor, and he was gay. He has kids of his own. And we had a conversation. He's like, you don't need to throw $100,000 out up front. You can do it in segments. And that was a much more like digestible process for us.
Yeah. Versus like writing a check for $100,000 up front. You're like, okay, well, if we do like 10,000 here and 40,000 there, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how we started it. But it's anyway. So
that was in 2017. It is now 2021.
We still have no baby.
Well, it's a journey.
I can't imagine what that process is like. And I hope you're okay going into it at some point. I want to go back to what you were talking about, and I'm going to get teary because I have a daughter with special needs. I have a daughter who's on the spectrum, and just knowing that you see the struggle of your parents, and recognize that as the sibling of one, you know, it just means a lot. And I have another typical child who I know is going to have that experience as well, being the sibling of, and I foresee a future that she probably is going to live with us. And, you know, that will be a part of our lives. So it's just interesting for me to hear from a sibling of a special needs kid. So that's just my little part. I'm going to take a little second. Jess, why don't you take it away?
No, for sure. For sure. I mean, those are the things that, you know, I've seen your relationship with your brother, and Eric is awesome. And like y'all, you know, he has so much joy and brings so much joy to your family. And, but I think that I understand how you can say you feel some guilt about expressing that feeling, but that's a very real and honest feeling. I mean, any parent will tell you the parenthood journey, whether your child is neurotypical or not, like that is, it's a lot to be a parent. It is so much to be a parent. And if there is a way if there's something like that, you know, like as those of us who get pregnant naturally, we don't always know that we carry genetic markers or we have things, and it's always a crapshoot, right? No matter what, even if you do the genetic testing, you still don't know who that child's going to be and what's going to come down the road. So I understand though, like being able to acknowledge and hold space for the struggles and the journey that your parents have been on, and as you as well, because one day when your parents are not here, it will fall to you and your brothers to take care of him, you know? And so that is, I think, to not acknowledge that and to not consider that with regard to your journey would have been irresponsible to a certain degree, you know? I mean, it's a big jump to just be a parent, you know? And and I've said before how amazing Kara is. I see her struggle on the daily and how, you know, she adores Elin and takes such good care of her. And I've said from day one to have Kara and Graham as advocates for their daughter. Elin is so lucky, but I also know what it is to be in Kara's world with Elin, you know? And so,
I don't ever want to change her, but if I could eliminate that stress that you were talking about, that kind of underlying. So it's very responsible of you to be, you know, thinking about the path forward. And if there is a world in which you have any control over that, you know, what little control we do have. Like I know for a fact we could not have genetically tested for Elin, and we never would have known, you know, she doesn't right. have a specific thing that would have been recognizable. And so it is what it is, you know?
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, it's just about, you know, one of the gifts I think of this process is being able to reduce and look at the genetic markups. And like, you know, we could have the doctor look at the egg donor's eggs and genetically check and see if they're compatible with our sperm. And like, that's something that like, that's a gift of the process.
Yeah. But then also in the same like breath, you know, we're talking about trying to control what little we can, right? And clearly we have no control because we've been doing this since 2017 and we still don't have a baby. So
yeah, well, tell us. So you guys, I mean, and I just, what a, when you do have this child, whether you continue down the surrogacy road or you adopt, I just want to say they're going to be so lucky because you guys clearly do want so much to be parents and to be dads, and you're awesome people and individuals, and you are going to have a blast. You are going to have so much fun when that time comes. And how lucky for a child to have been wanted so much that you've gone through this years long journey. So will you, if you jumped off the bat, you jumped into surrogacy, right? And you made that decision. Will you tell us?
Yeah.
Will you tell us now, like, sort of how that has been as you've continued on?
Well,
do you want to?
I will say, like, you know, family wise, let's just talk about family for a minute and the decision to become parents, because that was an interesting process, because my family is so conservative in Texas, and they know like two gay people. Us, right? And then except for my niece who came out, you know, but it's
now
just
they
like,
know three,
but they don't have like the capacity or the exposure to understand things. And you know, I remember when I said to my brother, my older brother, but I remember when I said to him, like, you know, we really want to have kids and we're really kind of focusing our energy in that direction. And he was like, do you really think your lifestyle is conducive to being parents? You know, and this is a guy who's been married three times and, you know, gone through like several messy divorces and custody battles. And I'm like, I've been married to one person.
Right.
I've like set out for and achieved my goals in life. Like, you know, it's just an interesting, that privilege of not understanding mm-hmm. what yeah. that is. That was an interesting journey.
And then in the, like the opposite way, my family, I only have one brother and he does not have any kids. So my mom and dad are just like, yes, have a baby any way you can. We don't care. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, they don't even ask any questions. Like, is it happening? What's happening?
You is,
know,
she pregnant
like,
yet?
Is she pregnant? Yeah. You know? So yeah, they're just like, get a baby now, you know?
So anyway, so that, especially if we're talking Pride Month and talking about LGBTQ.
Yes. You know, that was something I actually had said to Kara. I said, I would love to talk to them about just being a married gay couple and then wanting to be dads with regard to your upbringing and where
people don't understand. And it's so frustrating. And I think that especially with the surrogacy process, it's like everyone just assumes you're going to adopt and then they don't. And people don't know how to have that dialogue. And then, mm-hmm. like, especially when you say, like, we're going to go through surrogacy. Well, whose is it going to be?
And then the question is, well, I mean, you got to make sure that she's going to give up the baby after it's
That's
born.
That's something that like, my mom has said to me, like, you're not going to, like, let her see the baby after it's born. It's like, what? She's a person that we're having a relationship with that's carrying our child. Like, it's not her egg. It's not... Anyway, it's just an interesting, constant, interesting conversation that comes up where, you know.
Well, because we constantly have to remind them that genetically the baby is the egg donor's and ours, and she's just the carrier. And then once they become clear on that, they're always like, oh, but this is a conversation that's happened multiple
all the time.
Yeah,
right. I mean, it's and across times. And you've been doing this for like 5 years and it's still happening. That's how much you have to go back to it mm-hmm. over and over again.
Yeah, especially because I feel like once the child is there, sometimes maybe that, you know, that gets stripped away because then there's the focus of the child. But you've right. been kind of in this purgatory of having to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it for so long.
Well, and also I think that so many people, I mean, we've even been guilty of this where they'll look at the baby and be like, he kind of looks like that kid, that mm-hmm. dad or that dad. And, you know, if that baby is there, ours, exactly. it's going to be our baby. And, but anyway, I think what's interesting, so we started this process of just getting like the egg donor and getting the embryos made. That was the first step. And that we didn't really know, you know, we didn't want to go through an agency. If you go through an agency, you drop $20,000 just to start. Right. Wow. And we just didn't have that. And we were like, you know, the doctor was like, you could just get your embryos made and frozen and you could just pay to have them frozen until you're ready for the next step. So we just went through our clinic. They sent us some egg donors. Do you want to tell them?
Yeah. Yeah. So like choosing the egg donor.
I was going to say, you didn't just like call up like some friend. I was going to drop some name from our business, but I don't want to put that on them. But like, you could just like call up a friend because I know that has happened. I do know like there's someone in our business who was an egg donor for someone. I'll tell you off camera. People are like, who is it? But the twins that came from that donor are her eggs. Like,
I also know someone in our business who was a sperm donor for his gay sister's egg or embryo match. So the egg is from the non-related woman and the sperm is from basically the uncle.
Yeah. I mean, so they're genetically tied. I mean, I was thinking about reaching out to my cousins and like all this stuff, but then I was like, you know, the doctor was
too.
Yeah.
Right. And then the doctor was like, it doesn't really matter. Like, you know, you need a healthy baby.
Well, yeah. And all of those things that we were talking about, they're like, you can control as much as you think you can control. But the truth is you can't control any of it. And the kid's going to get here and they're going to be what they're going to be.
So tell us, I'm sorry, we jumped in. So tell us about
it. Yeah. So we went through their list of egg donors. And I think truthfully, I think we only looked at three profiles. Is that right? Yeah, that is right. And the first profile that we saw was a young lady who she was very sweet. She had a video.
It's like a dating profile.
It's like a dating profile. The other,
you know, it's like you see like everything. There's a whole photos of her as a child and photos of her.
And her ethnicity and her eye color, all this stuff. And then but she had a video and the other two profiles did not. And she had this video and she spoke and she told us, you know, why she wanted to do it. And she wanted to do it because her husband, his parents, I guess, were not very good parents. And so he was kind of taken in by like these, two gay men and they kind of helped raise him. And so they're still close with him. And he said, you know, the one thing we regret is that we never tried to have a child. So she was like, I always wanted to help a gay family. And then she mentioned that she's a twin and Brett is a twin. And she was also a dancer. And so we were like,
you guys,
like,
she's the one.
Cool. We're like, great. Yeah. So it was super. It was.
We don't know her name.
We don't know her name.
You don't know her name even?
Wow. 3, 2, 1, AB, 9, 6, 9,
I don't know. 8.
You guys, I've cried now like 3 times already.
I was not anticipating this today.
When was
that
then?
Her. That was in March of 2018.
Oh my God.
So we did our, they call it, was that the team day? No. Wait, wrong. So that was in March of 2018. So you go, you give the sperm. They were able to get, like,
oh, she was so fertile that they extracted 38 eggs from
her. That's a lot of eggs.
But you know how it is. It's like, and then they narrow it down and I think they ended up with 11 eggs. And then after that, they were able to get 5 embryos.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's legit, y'all.
Yeah. So that was that process.
And then they were frozen and then that was like it. And I was like, okay, well, let's just hold off. We'll just keep these frozen. And then I was like, how do we find a surrogate? And someone had suggested looking on Facebook. There's like Facebook groups for gestational carriers and intended parents. And so I just joined these groups. Also, I was trying to figure out the vocabulary. Like, I didn't know gestational carriers actually were intended surrogate, or that we were the intended parents.
Right.
So there's like verbiage that I just wanted to try to get familiar with. And out of the blue, I just, on an impulse, which I tend to do, I made a post in one of these groups with our photo and was like, we're Stephen and Brett. Like, we live in New York and we, you know, just like we are hoping to have a baby in the near future. Let me tell you, the people who reached out on Facebook were, I mean, there were some sketchy looking people.
We got some interesting messages for sure.
Like, no teeth, like, you know, I'm very healthy.
maybe not.
But we did get a message from somebody who seemed to be, you know, seemed to be good and seemed to be great. And she had been a surrogate twice before or once before. And she had two kids. So we started talking with her. We started talking with her and her husband. They seemed very, you know, they seemed normal and it seemed good. So we, you know, took the steps. She sent in her medical records and she checked out. We ended up flying her up to New York in March or February of 2019. And we had our team day, which is where, you know, she goes through all the medical testing. We do like a therapy session with her. There's, you know, all of the stuff, the physical anatomy, you know, they take the blood and all the stuff. And she seemed fine. Everything was good.
She had some PTSD that she had experienced since being a surrogate from, there was a break-in to their house. And that was the reason why she couldn't go back to the agency she worked with.
Right.
They were very particular, like, you can't have any PTSD or anything like that. So other than that, she was a great candidate, but then...
And they were able to clear her of all of that stuff. They talked to her therapist and she was fine. And then we took a while to go to the next step. So we were cleared and we weren't really in a financial place immediately to move forward.
Like, he left Hello Dolly. Like, we were both like kind of in this transition career wise. So we were like, let's just wait. And then I booked Wicked in like November.
I remember when you booked Wicked and thinking like, the lottery, he won the lottery. Yeah. Like, now they can have the baby. Like, that's just like, you'll know.
That was
like,
exactly what we thought.
Yeah, exactly. And then,
and then COVID. But she had said, you know, we had said, we're in a bit of a financial place. Can we hold? She said, November, just let me know.
Or just December.
December. And so in November, I booked Wicked. I was like,
and we were going to move forward.
And we reached out to her and said, hey,
we're ready.
Like, we're ready. Let's do this. And she was like, I'm not interested anymore.
So, and that was at Thanksgiving. I believe I was actually visiting your family and you weren't with me because you booked Wicked. Anyways, I was, when we got that news, and that was devastating. That was devastating. That was a big hurdle and roadblock. So that was Thanksgiving. And then the second week of December, we went to a friend's birthday party.
One of your recent guests, Kate Reinders.
Oh, okay.
It was her birthday party in December. And
2019, this is still pre-pandemic.
Her friend was there who we know, who's a mom, an awesome, awesome person. We kind of become friends with them. We'd spent a day with them at Disney World. They live in Orlando. And, she's drunk at the party and
not wasted,
but like she's drunk,
chatty,
you know,
and
she's
chatty.
Like,
yeah, she's chatty.
Yeah. She's like, I would so carry your baby.
And we're like, we'll call you tomorrow. You better be serious because we're not joking around. So we called her the next day and
she was like, I'm serious. And I wouldn't offer this to anybody, but I just think you'd be great parents. And we were like, okay.
Wow.
And so, and now she signed a legal agreement with us and we and then the pandemic hit, of course, and we were like, oh, great. Right. Because we were supposed to do all of that stuff in March. Like, literally,
oh my God.
The Monday after the shutdown was supposed to be our team day.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. Well, this is perfect spot. Well, we will take a break. Y'all come back and hear the rest of it. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
All right.
I'm dying to hear the rest of the story.
I mean, me too, you guys, because then the pandemic hit. What happens next?
So
what
then
is
the
it?
pandemic hit.
We had to cancel the
deployment. We canceled it. We like rescheduled. I think the first time we rescheduled to May, and then it was still like last
when Broadway
May
was only going to be shut down for 4 weeks. Remember that?
And we ran into this issue with her. You know, she has two kids. One has an immunodeficiency. And so then she's like, I don't want to get exposure to the virus.
Yeah, of course.
And so we're trying to figure out how to get her to Connecticut, which is where a doctor is.
Oh,
it just was such a thing.
So we kept rescheduling the appointment.
Well, and on top of that all, let's not forget, your job was gone.
Yeah.
Right.
And the money was gone. Like that was the money you had planned. And at this time, y'all still had your East Village apartment right in New York.
So we're living in we're quarantined in our 550 square foot fourth floor walk up trying not to kill each other. And you know,
that's not true, we got along so well. I don't know what you're talking about.
Going on walks to like Tompkins Square Park where all the homeless people are like hanging out
and we're trying to do like TikToks and
right, the madness of like creating content too and trying to build
in
that
COVID
side
times.
Of the business. I mean, that's a whole thing too.
Well, yeah, and that's a whole nother thing too.
And so then in the first part of the pandemic, we ended up going to Pittsburgh and staying at my brother's house because we knew we could like kind of isolate there and we would have space. And while we were there,
because pivot, like work wise, we both kind of pivoted everything online. He's teaching ballet online,
teaching online.
I was coaching. I started coaching and really focusing on building my coaching practice
and podcasting. So we had pushed the appointment a couple of times. And so we're in Pittsburgh and then we got some really exciting news, that our apartment, somebody wanted to see our apartment. And so we let them see it. And they saw it and they put an offer in.
Amazing.
A cash offer.
Yeah. So that was like magic. Hallelujah. Magical. Yeah. It was a magical moment. And
were you planning
so
on selling it or was it, it just came out of nowhere?
We had listed it in 2019 and then took it off the market because there were no bites. So it wasn't even really on the market. It's just that the broker that had listed it for us just called and said, hey, I have this family that's looking for an East Village place. Would you want to show it? And we were like, we're not even there. So
please show it, take it. And and they put in an offer and we decided to accept their offer. And because we didn't want to have to pay our mortgage at the beginning of the pandemic, we had, you know, gotten rid of our, what is the word? Deferred our mortgage, deferred our mortgage. But we had no idea how we were going to come back from that, you know?
Yeah.
So we were just so excited to have sold it. And then it gave us the option to just push and plow forward with having the baby. We were like, yes, yes, yes. And so then what was the next step? What happened? I mean,
we went up to New York to pack and put our stuff into storage. Cause we're like, we'll put in storage for now and we'll move back to Pittsburgh. And then when Wicked comes back, like we'll just keep our stuff here and move back. So while we were in New York for a month packing, Stephen got asked to go teach ballet in Houston at a ballet school in the Woodlands in and they have a studio in Montrose. And they offered to pay for our housing. And we were like,
Yeah.
So we got in the car, we drove 3 days and,
been here ever since.
That was in August. I never thought I'd live in Texas ever again. And here we are.
And here we are in Texas.
But you're near your family, right? Like, or they moved. Yeah. I mean, that's
Yeah, that's, they don't live nice in Orange thing. Anymore. So no. It's like they're all really close and really good friends that are really close by. And Steven's job has been great. And so we were able to like, okay, he's got steady money. We no longer have to pay this ridiculous Manhattan mortgage and maintenance. And we had some cash so we could put that into an escrow account and start moving forward with the baby.
And so, you know, and then the next, I actually don't know why. So we got here in August and I guess it just took a while for the process. Why did it take so long?
We had to get the legal agreements written. Right. We had to get her medical clearance. There's all this process that happens.
Well, and also you were like, not just that surrogacy situation, but you're also moving to a new state and like all that comes with that too, you know, in the middle of a pandemic still.
And then trying to book her, waiting for her cycle. Like, cause then you get into like the biological process of like,
I've never been so involved in a woman's cycle in my life. Like, I'm like, wow, I never thought this would be so like, exciting.
We're learning about, you know, what a uterus is and how thick the lining gets.
How thick the lining should be.
Like what
how many days after
they can do the transfer so that it's
I honestly feel like the education that gay men get when they are going through surrogacy is the education that all men should get to understand what is going on when a woman menstruates and then has a baby.
Yes. And even some women, y'all, true. Because it's full disclosure, I was on the pill for literally almost my entire adult life. I went off the pill. I went off the pill during the pandemic. And one day I said to Kara, I was like, oh my God, it's like the middle of the month and I have cramps. What is going on? She was like, Jess, it's called ovulation. Like I had, because when I went off the pill to have Elliot, we got pregnant like 3 months in. It was very fast. I know, it's crazy. But like, so I had, that was the only time I'd been off the pill. And I was like, here I am at 39 years old, finding out what ovulation feels like. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so I would love to have that education. That was very helpful.
It's been very kind of thrown in the fire, you know, so we had to get her to cycle. We put her on estrogen and then that her body reacted negatively to it. Mm. They were like, so then they needed to see if her body would naturally do what it needed to do. And it did. And then we had to wait another cycle in order to like make sure that. So it's just like waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, because there are only so many days in a month you can actually get pregnant. I mean, that's the thing
finite.
It's very finite amount of time. So it's not like, you know, I think when you're in your early 20s or whatever, and you're worried about getting pregnant and you're like, oh my God, at the end of the day, you can only get pregnant in a certain amount of days.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so then we have to, you know, figure out that those days and then book her a flight, get her a car, get her a hotel, get her up to Connecticut.
Wow.
You know,
that's all true.
During a pandemic.
Also, before we convinced her that it was okay to fly, she actually was thinking about driving 15 hours.
Oh my God.
And we had to actually like really convince her to not drive. So she did end up flying. We made our first appointment for the embryo transfer February 8th.
He's so good at dates. I don't remember this.
There's only certain things I remember. And then everything else, I don't really remember.
But it was going to be like a Zoom session watching them put the embryo into her uterus. And it was very exciting.
It was
and
so
I
exciting.
Have a video of us like watching it and we're just like holding on and watching on Zoom.
Like holding your breath.
And crying. And she's, you know, and she's wearing a mask. The poor thing is like, you know. And we were so excited. And then of course you have to wait a week until they can do a blood test to see how that's going. And we waited a week. This is just in February. And they did the blood test and they're like, it's looking really good. Her numbers are going up.
She was positive for pregnancy. That's what they say.
And then a week later, they want to check for a heartbeat. And they did the week later, we did a...
is it an ultrasound?
Ultrasound for the heartbeat. Mm-hmm. There was nothing there.
And but then, her numbers had still...
But her numbers were increasing. Right. So they were like, wait a week. And then they went and it was just this really faint, kind of slow, dull heartbeat. And then we found out it just wasn't going to take him. And we were very upset and we very depressed for several weeks.
I feel like I'm actually finally like coming out of whatever I was in. I mean, that was in April,
she cried
the end of March.
She cried immediately.
Yeah.
And I don't think it registered for us. It registered for her immediately. But when it took me maybe a week or so to realize, oh, we had a miscarriage and And it sucks. And then her body wouldn't release it. So she's just, it's just like in her. Yeah. And she felt horrible. And we had to wait and schedule a DNC. And
also, like, so there's all this waiting, right? But there's also like a lot of emailing happening between us, her, the doctor in Connecticut and the doctor in Florida. And so there's all this like back and forth, and like you don't get the answers you want quickly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm sure you guys all know this, but it's just like, it's really hard. Frustrating. It's super frustrating because you just want her to be healthy and happy. And she was like struggling at this moment. And it was just so, talk about not being in control. Yeah. I mean, it sucked.
Well, and because you are good, decent people, so you cared about her. I mean, I'm sure there are people who go through this journey who don't really connect with their surrogate, or they don't factor in her emotional well-being, or her, you know, they just want to know, how are we pregnant? What's happening? What's going on? And so, you know, for you guys, you had this personal connection with her, but I think even if you hadn't known her through, you know, like a friend of a friend, it's like you care about her as a human. You know, you're empathetic towards what she's going through. And also there's probably some like guilt then, I would think. I don't know, because you're like, we're putting her, she wouldn't be in this position if we weren't, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like to think if we weren't trying to do this, and now she's going through this journey, and that's.
And we sit there on the fence, and we're like, you know, because we talk to her all the time, and we're like, and especially during after the DNC and all that procedure. And I was just like, and then after she got the DNC, she said something to us like, I think we'll be able to try again in June. And really? I was like, wow. I mean, it was just like the fact that she was so good.
She was ready, like, to just give.
She's on board.
She's still on board.
She's a freaking angel.
She really is.
She's like a different breed
and
of
so,
human.
You know, just to bring it back up again. No, you know, we're on the, you know, the upswing of things again. I think emotionally,
she got her period like last week, and we were like, yay, she got a period, you know, like
it was 2 weeks ago. And I was like, you know, like, you know, the nurse email is like, let me know when you bleed. I'm like, why do they have to say that? Why does it say bleed? You know what I mean? Like, anyway, so it's all looking good. She's, you know, in a better place. She's moving forward. We're all vaccinated now. We're all, I feel like, just emotionally better. I think we were all so stressed at the time, and we didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
Well, and that plays into it too. Mm-hmm, so much, mm-hmm. You know.
And her body, you know, was doing the right thing for whatever reason. The embryo didn't take, and that's okay, you know. But I will say, like, personally, I don't know what you think, but I think I was so depressed, and I didn't.
We were crying every day.
I didn't
at
actually.
At some point, just randomly crying, you know.
I didn't actually realize it. And now I feel like, you know, we moved into a house, and that was another stress.
At the same time.
That was another stress. But I feel like I'm finally like, oh, I feel like myself again. It's crazy. So I can't imagine what it's like for a woman, because it's like, it's all so like not in your control. Mm. You know, it's crazy. So, yeah.
It's just, I mean, the combination of science that it takes to make this happen, right? But also the kind of like the spiritual and emotional nature of it, right? Like you moving forward and being like, we want to have a family, and everything that's involved in it. It's so complicated. It's much more complicated than a man and a woman naturally having a child, right? Yeah. It happens a lot of times without anybody thinking about it, right? But it also happens for a heterosexual couple who struggles, they go through this as well. And it's just, I feel so much for you guys being on this journey for as long as you have been on, with all the bumps along the way. Not to mention, I mean, the things that you kept talking about, you're like, oh, well, I got this job, so now we can move forward with having a baby. The things that come into play financially, even to be able to move forward in this way. You know, I feel for you. But I also know that your baby's coming, and it's the baby that you are meant to have. Yeah. And it's just going to be the most magical day when it happens. I just know it. I can look at your faces. Like I just know it, in whatever form it is, right? That baby's coming for you.
Yeah. The one that's supposed to be there. You know, we always say it's like that child wanted to be there, you know, and that little soul wanted to be on this earth. And so it's just waiting. They're just waiting. Yeah. They're just
they didn't really want to come during COVID. They're like, I don't need to be a part of that. No. It's fine.
Leave it be. Are her children, and then I want to talk to you before we close about where you are and what's happening in the future. But
yes.
Are her children young? I'm just wondering, like, if she's
because eight.
Oh, okay, so they're like pretty self-sufficient seven. With regard to like life.
They're so cool about it. I mean, they love us and like you know. So the kids are just so it's not your baby, but you're carrying it for Uncle Brett and Uncle Steven.
Well, her son associated it with Phoebe from Friends.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to be like Phoebe from Friends.
That's perfect.
I also love that a 10-year-old knows about Friends. I mean, my gosh, it holds true.
It's so old, it's cool again. Yeah. That's the problem. Yeah. Yeah.
That's totally Phoebe from Friends. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Well, you guys, so now you're in Texas and built in babysitters to a certain degree. I mean, if you stay, but here's the question. Will you stay? Are you staying? We know you've bought a house. Broadway's coming back. Wicked is coming back. You've talked about it, but like, where do you stand on that? Broadway husbands?
It was a difficult decision, but I turned down Wicked last week.
Wow.
Yeah. I was swinging and that place is such a machine and it was just not fun. they care more about the show than the people, and we've all been in those shows. I know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a reason that they're sort of very corporate. There are those shows that get to a point where they're just going for so long, and they're
I pray and hope that the last year and a half will change the culture there, but I think that it's been there for so long that it was kind of embedded in there. I've never experienced such a stressful environment at a Broadway show. So I was like, you know, it would have been fine, I think, once I learned all my tracks, but I was covering 9 tracks.
Oh,
and
that's a nightmare.
I went on for my final track the week before the shutdown.
Oh my God.
So I was like, I just don't want to return to that. And Steven's job is great. And we're near family and we have space. And I know people at Tuts and I know people at the Alley and I know, and our agents are still submitting us for stuff. And because we're spending so much less to live here, if I book a TV spot or something, I can afford to fly up to New York. Right.
And everything is virtual auditions now. So it doesn't even matter if that's what your focus is.
Yeah, the amount of auditions, the self-tapes that we've had, it's a lot. So it's actually been pretty good. It feels, you know, and it's not forever. I think we can all say that like during the pandemic, we've learned that, you know, we don't have control and nothing's forever, you know, and this is just for today.
That's all we've been trying to do, is just take it a day at a time. And it's like, today, if we bought a house, we'd actually spend less per month than we're spending for storage and for a furnished apartment. What if we do that? And then we just got to that moment and now we're going to get to this next moment and then we'll get to the next moment and who knows?
And I mean, I had an audition for a Whataburger commercial yesterday. So I was like, you know, you've made it in Texas when you have an audition for a Whataburger commercial. I was so excited.
Yes.
I was like,
oh my God. Oh my God. What I wouldn't give for a Whataburger run right now. Oh my God. Oh, that's amazing. You guys.
I just love that though, that you said like, it's for this moment, right? It's what, and if, like you said, if the pandemic has taught us anything, is that we have zero control and we have to make the best of our circumstances at this moment.
Absolutely.
And you've completely done that, you know, and hats off to you. Cause a lot of people we've all struggled. I mean, to be honest, but we're all just doing the best we can. Right.
Amen.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. Guys, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today and for sharing your journey and your story and being so honest and truthful, because I think I think it's so important. I think to make sure that people who are also on this journey know they're not alone, for those gay couples or even, you know, hetero couples who are struggling to conceive, to hear more in depth of what the journey is and the emotions that come with it. And I love it. And for those who listen, maybe places where they don't know too many gay people, right?
Yes.
Where they aren't exposed to people who are in the LGBTQ community. And we're always seeking to amplify and enlighten and, you know, spread joy and show that we're all the same, right? We all are the same at the end of the day. We need to take care of each other, right?
Yeah.
So awesome.
Thank have you for a great having day. Us.
Of course, guys. Yeah. Of course. And happy Thank Pride.
You. Yeah.
Happy Pride.
Hala. Thanks for kicking us off.
Be well.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dory Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.